Okay, so this is Robin, and we're doing a workshop on anorexia and bulimia today, and just have been feeling the need for this. I know I need it for myself, so I'm hoping that there's other people out there that have been looking forward to it. We're going to have, there's going to be four speakers. There's going to be myself and Joanne and Rowdy and Patricia, and so I was just saying before we started recording, so I'll say it again, that, you know, bulimia is, can be, there's three different, that I know of anyway, forms of bulimia. There's the purging by vomiting and the exercise and laxative, and then there's the anorexia. That's just where we just refuse to eat, and we're just going to talk about these two diseases, and hopefully all of us will be a little more educated and understanding with all of that. First off, we're going to let Joanne speak about, and she's going to speak about the physical consequences that can be caused by the diseases. So I would like for us to all join in the serenity prayer first, and then we're going to get started, okay?
God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can't change, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thy will, not mine, be done.
Amen. Okay. All right. So, Joanne, would you want to share for 20 minutes on your thoughts of the disease and what it's done for you?
Yes, I will. Thank you. This is Joanne, compulsive eater, anorexic, bulimic, and I'm all choked up over this because this is my first time of really writing about the way I used to treat myself with food and how devastating it was. I felt it at a depth I had never felt it before. And I'm grateful to you, Robin, for asking me to participate in this because I needed to do it. So I wrote things out, and I'll do the best I can and hopefully help someone. Okay, my name is Joanne, a compulsive eater, anorexic, bulimic. And I wish to thank Robin for asking me to participate in this workshop. I am grateful to be alive today, as I should be dead with what I have done to my body to stay thin. I went to any length to destroy myself, as I hated who I was. I went to my first OA meeting in 1968, but did not find what I needed being an anorexic, bulimic, compulsive eater. No one talked about it then, and I don't know if it was shame or what it was, but I was hurting. I was 32 years old when I started to be a bulimic and an anorexic. I'm going to share some of the physical complications that I have found of the research I did of being an anorexic bulimic along with part of my story. They are gruesome and in some respects life-threatening. It sounds like I'm just reading a list of complications from these diseases, but I don't know how else to present them in another way. Bulimia attacks every part of the body. We get malnutrition. We get dehydration. We lose hair, bone, teeth. And then we get a disease called acid reflux. And high levels of acid in the blood results in coma and death. We get pancreatitis, diaphragm damage, and hernias from the vomiting, kidney damage, cardio arrest, and brain damage. Binging and purging is like living in hell day after day. Binging can cause a gastric rupture, which results in death. If one can't purge, then laxatives are used, which I used for 30 years, and excess exercise. And when I read about the binging and the purging and the gastric rupture that can happen, that really got hit home because of all the times that I did that. The toilet was my second home to stay thin. It was really awful. My kids were locked in their rooms while I went and did that. The vagus nerve can be damaged to where the stomach can't digest food properly, and sometimes not at all because the vagus nerve can't send signals to the stomach muscle to digest the food normally. The doctors say it is a horrific disorder. People who use Ikapac to force purging are subject to this. I used Ikapac, and thank God it stopped working, as it can cause heart damage and heart attacks. It is very toxic. But who thinks of that when you're in the obsession to be thin and eat all you want? I never thought of all the physical damage I was doing to myself. All I cared about was the food and staying thin. It was on my mind 24, all while I was awake every day of the week. Anorexia is actually watching your body fade away. I could never be thin enough. I couldn't think straight and just wanted to be thin, so I went to any length to not eat. And when I did eat, it was not nourishing food. I had vision problems and itched continuously. My period stopped and I had to get shots for that. I also had to give myself vitamin B shots for 2 years to help my body to recover from malnutrition. I had muscle wasting and spasms and could hardly walk sometimes as I was losing my balance. I don't know how I was able to function, but I believe God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. I had 2 small children, worked full-time, and just had gotten sober a couple of years in Alcoholics Anonymous. In the 1970s, I was trying to find some recovery from my bulimia and anorexia and met a lady who was also like me, so we sponsored each other. Now, everybody knows what that's like. 2 bulimic anorexics walking around doing it actively every day, trying to keep each other from doing it. So we sponsored. and that was not good, as we didn't stop being anorexic or bulimic. Now, this lady I knew from other meetings I went to, and she was very, very thin. And I was as thin as she was, but I didn't think I was thin enough, and I wanted to be like her. And so anyway, excuse me, one day this lady asked me to come to her apartment to help her. As I walked in, I could smell the vomit. It was summer, and she had the heat up on high and was wearing a coat. I asked her if she was eating, and she said yes. And she was only eating the wings of a poultry food. Just the wings. That's all she was going to eat. She was so thin that you could see the bones poking through her skin. She asked me to look in her refrigerator and take out the milk. Behind the bottle of milk was a sculpted head of a man with his mouth open. I asked her what this represented, and she said, "Looking for food as he is starving." She said when she wants to eat, she will look at this head she made, and it keeps her from eating. I took the head and told her I would dispose of it, and she said she would kill herself if I did. This was her friend. I put it back and left. I have not seen her since. This was a turning point for me as I stopped purging. This threefold disease takes people to the depths of insanity, then death. I am a pre-diabetic, and my last A1C test was 2 weeks ago, and my numbers are getting better, and I don't need medication. I know if I pick up sugar and flour, excuse me, I will die. My body cannot process any grains or certain fruits anymore. My pancreas has been too damaged. I'm on medical abstinence. Thank God for C-Health for having that. My doctor approved C-Health's food plan and said to keep up the good work. I lost 30 pounds before coming to C-Health. I am at my maintenance weight. Before C-Health, I was doing other food programs via the telephone, but nothing felt right and I wasn't comfortable with my food. A friend told me about C-Health, which I had never heard of, and after my first meeting, I was home. My abstinent date is April 6, 2012, and I am a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. What a gift. Thank you for being there for me. C-Health is the most wonderful food program on the planet. The 7 tools save lives. I hope someone who is a bulimic or anorexic got some help from my share, as you no longer have to be active in your disease, but can be active in your recovery. My phone number is 303-747-2415. That's Mountain Time. That's 303 747-2415. Thank you. And I'll mute now.
Joanne, thank you so much for that powerful share and heartfelt. Thank you for being so transparent with us. And so we'll all of us speakers will stick around, and at the end of the workshop we'll have time for answering any questions. And so we'll do that. Next we're going to have Rowdy speak for a while. And Rowdy's going to be speaking on the topic of dysmorphia, so and how that works with the with our diseases. So, Rowdy, I will be the timekeeper, and unless somebody else would like to volunteer to do that, we'll have a 20-minute share if you need that much time, with a 5-minute warning. And would somebody like to be that timekeeper? Okay, I can do it. I'll be happy to. So, so Rowdy, you just go right ahead.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name's Rowdy. I'm a compulsive eater. I'm grateful that I'm in a program that is called Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. I'm not in a program called Compulsive Overeaters Anonymous, and I hear often in meetings people share I'm a compulsive overeater or compulsive overeaters anonymous, and when I was young I went to Overeaters Anonymous when I first got into recovery from alcoholism, and I was a 21-year-old skinny kid with quite a few overweight middle-aged women, and they didn't take too kindly to me, even though I related to what they were talking about. So I'm grateful to have found a program that is for people with all different kinds of compulsive eating problems. Anorexia and bulimia, we are the minority. Most people are overeaters. And I've talked to some people who are so grateful that we're having this workshop, because they are anorexic, recovering anorexic, bulimics, or both. And also just people that are compulsive overeaters who want to know and understand more about people who suffer from anorexia or bulimia. I've been abstinent since January 12th of 2009. And, you know, to talk about dysmorphia, it's fascinating. The dysmorphic disorder is a disorder that has a diagnosis code in the DSM-4, and it isn't specific to eating disorders. It's the preoccupation with an imagined defect in appearance is what they call it, and it can take many forms. You know, people when I was very young, because of abuse issues and everything, I was filled with self-hatred and shame. And even as a child, when I looked in the mirror, I thought I was the ugliest person ever to have been created. And I hated God for making me so ugly when other people were normal and even some people beautiful. I didn't understand that. In my child's mind, that wasn't fair that I was so ugly, you know. So the dysmorphic disorder, for me, at first manifested as feeling unattractive and ugly. And people spend thousands and thousands of dollars on surgeries to try to feel pretty. But what I realized as a young child was the only way, and this is how my brain worked, the only way that I would be able to be attractive in any way, since I was so hideously ugly, was to have a good body. And so at a very young age, my preoccupation with my body was present. And I felt that I needed to have a good body, which equated to being thin. And I grew up with a family, a mother who, you know, tried different diets and had some of her own issues with her body and trying to lose weight and not to place blame, but, you know, that was part of what I grew up with. And so at a very young age, I started trying to control my eating and started exercising even as a young child. And, you know, the power of body dysmorphia is astounding. If you've ever seen, look at a picture of Karen Carpenter, how bony and really disgusting she looked at the end of her life. And to think she could look in the mirror and see herself as fat is just hard to imagine. But that was what I suffered from. And I look at pictures of myself as a child, and one particular picture that stands out is when I was in middle school, I was on the track team, and I don't have a lot of pictures from childhood, but I was not just normal sized. I was a skinny little kid. I mean skinny. And I know that even in middle school, I felt I was disgustingly overweight. And I look at that picture of that skinny boy, and I can't put myself in that boy's body because that was not what I looked like in my mind. The two don't go together. I believed I was fat, and I look at this picture of a person that's not fat, and I'm like, well, that couldn't have been me. And still to this day, with all the healing I've had, looking at that picture, there's part of me that's just like, is that me? Is that really me? Is that what I look like? You know? And so as I grew, I was an athlete, and I was in good shape, but constantly when I looked in the mirror, what I saw was fat, that I was fat, that I was overweight, and I was disgusting, and I needed to lose weight. And I won't go into it, but I was both anorexic for quite a long time until that stopped working and then became bulimic. And then at the end of that stopped working, and I couldn't control my weight anymore by starving myself or vomiting, and I actually put on weight that I had to lose, and so I say I lost 65 pounds in this program, but I'll go on to tell you that I've had to gain weight in this program as well. You know, it's interesting to me that throughout my eating disorder, I would gain weight and then I would realize I had gained weight and I would stop eating or start vomiting and exercising and I would drop the weight and it worked, you know, it worked. And just like other things that we have recovery from, if it still worked, I'd probably still be doing it. I'd probably be dead because I was already seeing damage in my esophageal reflux and the damage I'd done to blow out, you know, my esophagus and the damage I'd done to my body. I remember one picture right after I got sober in another program from drugs and alcohol. I traded my eating disorder, just went out of control after that. And there's a picture of me and my sister, and I'm standing there with her with my shirt off, and I am skin and bone. And people were telling me not only, you know, was I too thin, but I looked gross. And I look at that picture, and it's one of the only pictures I ever liked of myself in my entire life. Was to the point where people were saying, you look disgusting. And, you know, but in that picture, And at that time, I still felt I needed to lose more weight. So even at my thinnest, I always felt I needed to lose more. You know, you can be as skinny as can be, and my body, when I hit maintenance, leveled out at a very slim weight. I didn't level out at a kind of an average body size. I'm actually very thin. But if I just am sitting in a certain position and the skin on my stomach folds a certain way, it can still trigger that old belief of, oh my God, there's fat, you know? And so I've talked to people, you know, after I got abstinent and lost all the weight, the dysmorphia did not just go away. And I've talked to people who were like, oh, because I have a sponsee, I saw a picture of him, he's thin as a rail, and he still feels fat, he's younger in sobriety, and my response to him is, you have spent years and years hating your body for being fat, those neurons are hardwired, and it takes time for us to heal from that dysmorphia, especially when it began at such a young age. And so we lose the weight, and for a lot of people, it's just this huge celebration. But for me, I lost the weight, and I was so excited I had lost the weight, but I still felt fat. And it took a great deal of work with my sponsor and writing and talking to other people for me to slowly, over time, start to heal from the dysmorphia when I looked in the mirror. And for a long time, in my early abstinence, I would look in the mirror at myself, and the only thing I could think was, huh. Like, that was a thought. That was all I could think was, huh. It was like, who is that person in the mirror looking back at me? It couldn't be me. That can't be me. That skinny person in the mirror, that can't be me. And I couldn't believe, even though I'm not an idiot, and I know I'm looking in a mirror at myself, I could not internalize the fact that that thin body was mine. And so all I could do was just sort of look at it with this sort of like, huh, that's interesting. And then I would move on. And it was only over time and that I began to slowly heal from the dysmorphia itself and recognize that I actually have a slim body and that I am a slim person. There are still peaks every once in a while. You know, like I said, I can have a bad angle in a picture and that thought may come back, but for the most part, I feel grateful now after over 6 years that I can look in the mirror and recognize that I am not fat anymore. But I just really want to drive home to people that are really struggling with or have struggled with body dysmorphia for so many years, that just because we lose the weight, that doesn't mean the brain immediately changes and that dysmorphic disorder goes away. So for some people, it takes therapy. For some people, it just takes time. And on another side of it, just to throw in there, there is also body dysmorphia with people that are overweight. And I have talked to people who did not realize when they looked in the mirror, they did not realize how heavy they had become. They were surprised when they would go to the doctor and the doctor would tell them their weight. And so dysmorphia can work both ways. There are people that are compulsive eaters that were not able to look at their body in a realistic way. And did not recognize that they were as heavy as they actually were. Maybe that's a self-protective mechanism, I don't know what. But I just want to throw that in because I have met people who did suffer from dysmorphia on that level. And so, you know, bottom line, body dysmorphia is, it is deadly. And, you know, we've already talked about the deadliness of the disease of needing and feeling that you are fat even when you aren't, because what that drives you to do is to continue to abuse your body, whether that's by binge purging or whether that's by starvation, because no matter how thin you get, all you can still see is fat, and that will kill you if you continue on that way, because eventually your body's going to shut down, as was already so beautifully talked about by our other speaker. And so I'll end my share with the, there have been so many gifts and miracles of me finding Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how it saved my life. At the end of my eating, I had accepted that I was going to die from my compulsive eating. And I truly believe I would be dead had I not found CEA, or had I not been 12-step and CEA found me, however you want to look at it, because I could not lose enough weight no matter how thin I was. And I could not see what was really in the mirror. And just, again, reminding that those neurons that have been firing so long, and that false image that we've been believing and seeing in the mirror, and it becomes a part of our belief system. I believed to my core I was fat, no matter how thin I was. And changing beliefs that have been there for years doesn't just happen overnight because we get in the program and we get to a normal weight. And the last thing I want to share is that I'm very obsessed about and very proud in a grateful way that I'm very religious about working the seven tools of our program. I have a very strict sponsor, and I was raised in a very strict way that you work the tools all the time no matter what. But one of the places I got sloppy about 5 years into recovery was I stopped weighing myself every week because I had stayed the same weight for 5 years straight with on the eating plan that I was on. I just hadn't budged. And so I wasn't going to the gym as often where I normally weighed, and it had been quite a while since I'd actually got on a scale. And this is at 5 years abstinence. I walked into my doctor's office, and he looked at me and got me on the scale, and I had lost 15 pounds below my goal weight. And again, at my goal weight, I'm very thin. And I had no idea, even at 5 years abstinent, that I had lost 15 pounds below my goal weight. Looking in the mirror, I never noticed it. And so, you know, that body dysmorphia, you know, it is healed, but it can still rear its ugly head. You know, so for me, it requires constant attention, just like working the other parts of my program, but I work on recognizing that that is part of my character defects that I need to continue to work on, write about, and pray about. So I am blessed and honored. It was such an honor to be asked to speak on this panel. Robin, thank you so much, and thank all of you for listening. That's all I have to share.
Ravi, do you want to go ahead and leave your number now?
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
I am in Mountain Standard Time in Colorado, Fort Collins, Colorado, and my phone number is 970-488-9244. That's 970-488-9244. 9244. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ravi. All right. Okay, that's great. So next we're going to have Patricia talk about anorexia and bulimia and how it has manifested in her life and just what she's done and how Fiala is helping her. So, Patricia, it's your turn, and you can take your full 20 minutes if you want. We're running way ahead of time, so take all the time you want.
Okay, thank you so much, Robin. So my name is Patricia, and I am a compulsive eater, anorexic, bulimic. And first and foremost, I would like to thank my higher power for my abstinence and the gift of recovery and the proof of recovery. And I would also like to thank my higher power for the gift of the fellowship of CHOW, because today I know I'm not alone. And, you know, I'll just give you a brief history, my background. My earliest recollection of eating compulsively is at around the age of 5 and 6. I was born in Colombia, and I remember sneaking into my baby cousin's room, and I will eat, you know, like sneak in when nobody was watching, and I will take the powdered sugary substance that they will make her bottles out of, and I will hide in the corner and eat this compulsively. I was at that age already, you know, like hiding my emotions or resorting to other things to get out of whatever I was feeling. When I was 8 years old, my parents and my brother and I were very blessed to be able to come to the United States. And we lived with my grandparents and my uncle from 8 to the age of 16. Throughout this period, my uncle sexually abused me and molested me. And at the age of 8, I began to eat, my disease just took off. I started to eat large amounts of sugar and flour. And I remember, you know, that I would go to school. I had a best friend, and, you know, she was very thin and pretty, and she could wear all the clothes that she wanted to. And I was already close to 180 pounds at the age of 12. And, you know, I was, you know, I started to believe something was really wrong with me. But what I looked, it never dawned on me that my disease was much deeper than that. So that's when, you know, I wanted to be like her. I wanted to, people to say that I was pretty and I was thin, and but I wasn't, you know, in my head, you know, I always put the focus on the outside, and I wanted to look like my friend. So I was also picked on because of my weight. So at that time I began to control my eating. This is where the anorexia period comes in for me. I would go long periods without, like, if I knew there was a function or a party or something that we had to go to, I would, like, starve myself for, like, weeks, and I would just drink water. And it was so secretive, you know, like, I would do this, and I remember my body feeling tired and overwhelmed and, you know, but I had to look good, you know, and I wanted to lose weight. I was already controlling. And, you know, and I did. I lost a little bit of weight, and then it was always about how I wanted people to perceive me from what I looked on the outside. And, you know, and then once that was over, I would go back to eating compulsively and gain all the, you know, weight back. And it's such a sick cycle now that, you know, looking at it on paper. My mother was also very obsessed with weight and looking good. And she started to get very concerned about my weight issues. So she started to take me to these different doctors back in the 80s. And at that time, they prescribed, which I'm assuming now, looking back, were amphetamines. And I remember sitting on my bed, looking at the ceiling, not being able to sleep, and cleaning the whole apartment because I couldn't stop doing anything. And, you know, I guess my mother was doing the best she could with what she knew and had. Today I know that because of this program. And, you know, I just got sicker and sicker, and it was like a roller coaster of going to doctor, trying all kinds of diets, and nothing ever worked. There is alcoholism in my story. You know, that took off, and it wasn't until the age of 37 that, by God's grace, I ended up in an AA meeting, and by surrendering to that and being open to the 12 steps of recovery, I had an experience, and I was able to see for the first time my eating disorder. I never thought I had a problem. I thought that everybody ate like me, everybody starved themselves like me, and everybody controlled, you know, their eating. My bulimia really took off in when I was around 34. I was actually, you know, isolated in my room, and I will consume this large amount of alcohol and food, and I will proceed to make myself vomit, and this was like a constant. It was like a day-to-day thing, and I don't know, today it's by God's grace that I know that I was able to work and do other things, and it's totally God's grace. So I will eat all these large amounts of food, and I will drink all this alcohol, and then I will make myself vomit, and then I will also abuse all these kinds of laxatives. There was this particular tea that I will take that my mother used to take, and everything revolved around that. Like, my whole life revolved around, you know, I had to... this disease controlled my life. It was, you know, like the food and the bulimia, and it was all, you know, like control. I had to do everything to make sure that I will be able to eat and then to binge and then purge and like when I will go to the bathroom. And I was so addicted to the laxative abuse that I couldn't stop it. I came into another program, another program from this, not this fellowship, but in Overeaters. You know, I wasn't ready to surrender. I was still doing things my way, and I wasn't in enough pain, you know, and willing to surrender to the fact that I needed help. This disease took a lot from me. I was actually married to someone, and because of my bulimia, you know, I had a lot of physical ailments. I had acid reflux. I became infertile. I couldn't have any children. My period stopped at the age of 37 because I messed around with, you know, from my bulimia and the laxative abuse. My electrolytes and my body, you know, I stopped menstruating at that age, and I couldn't have any children. So, you know, these are some of the consequences of this disease for me. But on the other hand, I am grateful. I am so grateful. My accident date is September 1st, 2013. And by the grace of God, you know, this is just such a beautiful gift. You know, today I know who I am, today I know what I am, and today I know that I am just another human being, and I have a disease. And thank God that we have a solution. Thank God for the tools of recovery. Thank God for the people in recovery, you know, that I totally understand me and I can talk to we can identify. Thank God, you know, for the service that we get to do and how sharing my experience, strength, and hope can actually help somebody else. Today I know that that's the greatest gift that I have, because today I know that we have a solution, and the solution is, you know, the 12 steps of recovery, the practicing the tools of recovery, and the fellowship, and you know, it's just such a freedom, you know, not having to control my life and you know, my life to revolve around the food and when I'm going to get, you know, the next fix with my food and how I'm going to get the laxative and how I'm going to get the, you know, I have to go to the bathroom to bed, to purge, you know. It's just so much suffering, you know. Looking back, I totally know today that my higher power was with me all the time because I should have been dead, you know, from all the harm that I did to my body. And, you know, what a gift. I cannot say enough about See How, and I cannot say enough about the tools. And, you know, if anybody's out there and you identify with anything that I said, just know that you're not alone and that there is a solution, and it really, really works. And you don't have to suffer anymore. And, you know, I'd just like to thank again, you know, everyone who shared. And thank you, Robin, for allowing me to be part of this beautiful workshop. And I'm going to leave my number for outreach. Again, my name is Patricia. I'm a compulsive eater, anorexic, bulimic. And my number is Eastern Time, 718-309-6010. Again, 718-309-6010. Thank you so much.
Patricia, thank you so much for that share. Okay, now I will take my turn, and I just think this is just bringing back so many memories and stuff for me, and I think it's this is being very good therapy for me personally. So I'm very grateful for this, and thankful for the three of you. So my story is very much the same in a lot of ways. I too am I've got all three of the diseases, the anorexia, the bulimia, and the compulsive eating. I was in program for a while before I admitted the anorexia part, but because I thought I was over it, you know, I thought that was in my past. I thought I had dealt with that. That was long ago. But I don't think it does ever go away, not for me anyway. I think it's always going to be a shadow, and that's okay. I don't want to forget where I've come from. I just don't want to dwell on it. I don't want to think I'm stuck there because I totally am not stuck there. I am in recovery, and I'm very thankful for that. I'll be 49 years old next week, and this is probably my eating and my self-image problems started at a very young age. I have a twin brother. And he was always a little teeny kind of a guy, and in fact, he got teased probably as much about being wormy as I did about being chubby. So, and those were the words that, you know, that were used on to us. And so, you know, it does start at a young age. It certainly did for me. I can remember going down the road in the back of the car with Mom and Dad, and I can remember it would be really hot. It'd be wintertime, and I'd have my coat, and the heater would be on, and it would be hot in there in the car already. And I would turn around in the seat and put my face in the corner and put the blanket and the winter coat and everything up over me, and I would breathe really, really, really hard and try to make it even hotter and hotter in there, thinking that I could make myself melt a little bit and just cause myself to become smaller. And It was all-consuming. I thought about it all the time and thought that I just was never, I thought that was all that mattered, was what I looked like and what people around me thought of me. The words, you know, my parents, I know now that they love me after being in program for these last 5 years. I know that my parents did and do love me, I think I am extra sensitive. And so when I did my inventory, that was big. When I did my inventory, that really taught me and showed me, you know, I was still looking at myself through these little girl eyes and judging myself and others and the way they treated me through this little girl. And I'm not a little girl anymore. And when I sat down with pen and paper and did my inventory, it was so emotional. And because I realized all these years that I thought that people disliked me and even hated me and judged me, and were the ones that I blamed my eating disorders on, I when I sat down to write their names, I couldn't come up with only one, and it was myself. I had done most of this to myself, and that was such an eye-opener. I'm so thankful for inventory. I know a lot of people fight it, and it's not fun, but the other side of inventory is powerful, and I do think that it is a vital part of our program. The anorexia started when I was a teenager. My mom and dad were divorcing, and I didn't realize it at the time, but after these years and being in program and everything, I know that it was my way of coping with that. My whole world seemed to be falling apart. My brother and I had just graduated high school, just got back from our senior trip, and mom and dad told us 2 days before their 19th wedding anniversary that they were splitting up. And I was just crushed. And what was really bad was that my dad was involved with my mom's best friend, and that was the breakup of the marriage. And so not only did my mom feel betrayed, I felt betrayed. I felt he betrayed us all. And then my brother, he went off to college and left me there with mom all alone. I can remember when we were probably about 7 years old, I can remember her telling the neighbor lady, I overheard her saying, if it wasn't for Dawn and the kids, I would be an alcoholic. And I thought that was the weirdest thing for her to say, somebody that I never seen drink. And by golly, as soon as dad was out the door, she started drinking. And so my brother ran off to college to get away, and he had never wanted to go to college a day in his life, and I always did, but I felt like I needed to stay home and take care of mom, so that's what I did. And I resented that a lot. And I felt like the other son in the prodigal son account. You know, it's funny how these things manifest. I just quit eating. I just quit eating. I wouldn't eat a drop. I wouldn't eat one little morsel all week, Monday through Friday. I would not eat one crumb. I would take one calcium pill to work with me. I worked at a factory, very hard work, on an assembly line, working over a 550-degree soldering pot, and it was very hot and hard work on my feet all day, and I wouldn't eat anything. I'd take that calcium pill with a cup of Diet Coke, and that would be all I had all day. And I'd go home, and I'd go to bed, and that got harder and harder. Just climbing up the stairs to go to bed at night just got hard, and over the weeks, and I lost a tremendous amount of weight, very fast, very fast. Now on the weekends, I would go out with my boyfriend, who is now my husband, and I would eat whatever, you know, he wanted. We would do all of the things that normal teenagers did, but it would just run right through me. I really was not getting any nutrition, and I stopped having my period one blessed day, and I just knew that I was pregnant. I had to be pregnant because this had never happened. I was always so regular. And so, you know, there was no way in the world I was going to starve a baby. I did know enough to know that I wasn't eating enough to build a beautiful, healthy baby. So I started eating. And and I ate and I ate and I ate. And I wasn't pregnant. I wasn't pregnant. And I'm thankful for that. We weren't ready. And I wasn't, my body was definitely not healthy to start that. So, but I, you know, once I started eating, then I was off in the other direction. And the compulsive eating was back, and I was, you know, it had been laying there waiting patiently for me to come back. And boy, it pounced all over me, and I gained a lot of weight. You know, then it was just back and forth. It was all the diets that we've all tried, you know. This isn't such a terribly unique thing. The compulsiveness of it all is underlying in all of it. I definitely did the exercise. We did end up getting married and years later, and I got pregnant with our first boy, and I was already pushing 200 pounds when I got pregnant with him, and I gained 75, and it was terrible. My last month of pregnancy, I was total bed rest. I could get up and take a shower and eat my meals, but I really wasn't even supposed to be up long enough to fix my meals because my blood pressure and the swelling in my legs and everything was getting bad. And so that was, you know, that was a bad deal. Of course, at that time, I didn't realize that it was all my doing, that this was, you know, mostly a weight thing. I was in denial and thinking this was a pregnancy thing, not a weight thing. Had the baby, had to have him cesarean, not only because I could not have him because he was too big, but I just wasn't dilating to have him. But it was probably a blessing because he was a 10-pound, 4-ounce baby boy and 24 inches long, 23 inches long, and he was huge, and I was huge, and all of the pictures from when we came home from the hospital have been destroyed. The videos that show me in them, they've been destroyed. And that's sad. Those were precious, and I'm sad that I have ruined those. Then 3 years later, we had our second, and I was in training. Boy, was I ever in training. I was not going to do that. By then, I realized that, you know, the cesarean, the weight gain, all of this was all my fault. And with my second, the day I had him, I weighed quite a bit less than I did the day I got pregnant with the first one. And I did have a natural birth, and I was very thankful for that. Then, you know, I started the exercise bulimia. It just kept going. The whole time I was pregnant with the second one, I was exercising tremendously. Just, it was ridiculous. And then one day, well, I had a surprise birthday party for my husband, and everybody was commenting on how great I looked. I remember I had just lost 18 pounds, and I was feeling good. And I had this huge surprise birthday party, and like 20 couples came to our house, and it was a big deal. They all brought potluck, and I furnished a big nice main dishes. And anyway, tons of food, and I just went nuts. I just went nuts, and I binged, and everybody went home, and I kept binging, and my husband fell asleep, and I kept binging, and I felt bad. You know, I was feeling a little resentful. Here I am cleaning up everything. Well, so I could not go to bed like that. I just could not go to bed like that. And I thought of any way that I could get this food out of me, and that was when the purging started with the vomiting. And it was so easy for me, and I was hooked. I thought I had the world by the tail. I really thought, wow, there shouldn't be any heavy people in the world. This is it. This is it. You know, I can actually have anything and eat it too. And so that went on for 15 years. And my husband, I finally had to tell him one night. I was just so sick, and I told him one night, and he didn't even know what the word bulimia meant. Or bulimic, and so I had to describe that to him, and that was just so humiliating, and I was really emotional about it. I was just bawling like crazy, and he just looked at me like he was just so disgusted, and just was like, well, stop it, you know. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, that's what I'll do. I'll just stop it. Okay, hadn't thought about that, you know. The next morning he asked me had I stopped, and I told him yes, and we didn't talk about it for many years, many more years. It was probably when I told him, at that time I had probably been only doing it for about 5, and it continued for another 10. I think he knew. He didn't know what to say. I think I know my oldest boy heard me many times, and the bathroom was beside his bedroom. And even though I tried to cover that up, you know, it was terrible. I really thought that I would die that way. I seriously thought I would die with my head in the toilet, because my stomach was so full when I would bend over the toilet. I just couldn't imagine it when it popped. I broke blood vessels in my eyeballs, and terrible throat pain and the headaches, and all caused from the pressure of this just nasty thing to do to yourself. And I couldn't quit. I couldn't quit. I was like, that was my drug. One day I was going to have me a big old binge and purge session, and I prayed about it. I just stood at the kitchen counter and just asked God to please, I don't want to do this, and he got me out of the house, and I prayed about it later that day, and I did binge and purge later that day, but I prayed about it, and I remember thinking, I know alcoholics. And I really admire an alcoholic that goes to AA meetings. I really admire their work and their determination to make themselves, help themselves out. And I had known that I had heard of Overeaters Anonymous before. I had checked it out years ago, but the closest meeting was a long ways away, and I just couldn't do that with young kids. So, but I looked it up online, and there was a meeting that very night in the closest city to me, which was 85 miles one way. And my husband came home from work that night. I was crying in the kitchen. I told him I was broken and I needed to be fixed. And I told him all about it, that I'd still been doing it. And he looked at me and he said, "You go. And you go and you get fixed." So I went that very night, and I learned 2 very valuable things: that I'm not a bad person trying to get good. I'm a sick person trying to get well. And I learned that it's none of my business what other people think of me. And those 2 things I had going over and over in my head the whole time, the whole 85 miles driving back home. And I did those meetings for 11 months, and then somebody in there had told me about CEA How, and it's exactly what I needed. I needed more structure. I need more availability to the meetings, the one meeting a week, and being able to share for 5 minutes, what just wasn't enough. And so here I am, and I now have, I did get free from the purging in OA, and the date of that is May 15th of 2010. So I went 5 years in about 2 months of not making myself vomit. Honestly, I couldn't go 5 days before. There was times I couldn't go 5 hours before. I really seriously did think I was going to die that way. I was so hopeless. So that is such a gift. What a precious gift from God. It's unreal what program's done for me. And then I got abstinent in CA How about a year after that. That was April 24th of 2011. And so I have 4 months and about 4 years and about 3 months of abstinence. And it's just a miracle. It's a miracle, an absolute miracle. And every day's not easy. There's days I white knuckle it, but they're getting fewer. And I am getting more and more at home in this program. This is home. This program is home. I never want to go anywhere else. I never have to look for anything else. This is exactly where I need to be and where God wants me. This program is exactly what I always prayed for, which was I just wanted somebody to tell me what to eat. If you just tell me what to eat, I promise I'll do it, you know. And I need somebody to promise to walk this with me. Please, I need a friend that'll just hang in there with me through it all. And it needs to be cheap. I can't afford membership, dues, and I can't afford, having to drive to meetings. And so the phone bridge is just, it's exactly what I need. And I have friends all over, really, the world now, that all over this country that, it's unreal, the friends that I have now, the real friends, people that really know me, and then I know them, and we love each other only because we share this food thing, and it's just, it's precious to me. I truly can say that I am a grateful compulsive eater. I truly am grateful for being anorexic and bulimic. Because I can relate to those people. Two of my sponsees have struggled with the bulimia, and I love them to death. I wouldn't know how and what they're going through if I didn't know this myself. So I'm thankful that God has given me this. I truly am. And what beautiful medicine we have. You know, this healthy food that we get to eat, that's my medicine. Talking to these people, that's my medicine, you know. I could be strapped to a chemo machine. There's so many worse diseases. I'm thankful that this is what God has used to wake me up to his love and his and my need for him, and to get me out of the self-sufficient, prideful mindset that I was in, and the thinking that I had to do it all myself. And that was another thing. I did have a God before program, but I felt like I was disappointing him, and so that was even more of a burden on my heart, because I didn't want to be disappointing my God. I didn't want to be doing that. And so but now I realize that He just needed me to be looking to him for the help. I went to ask him all the time for the help, but I wanted him to, I wanted to be able to do it, and I can't. I'm totally powerless, but he is all powerful, and I'm just sitting back and letting him do it, and I'm enjoying the journey. And this recovery thing is a great place to be. And with that, I will pass. I will leave my number, and then we'll open it up for sharing if there's anybody that has questions. So my number, I'm in Central Time, Missouri, and my number is area code 660-425-5799. It's 660-425-5799. And I live in Missouri, which is Central Time. And I thank you so very much for being here, everybody. Now we'll open it up for questions. If there's anybody out there, I don't even know how many people we have on here, but hopefully we can help you answer any questions. So if you want to ask a question, and if you want to ask a specific one of us to, you know, a specific question, that would be great. So we'll open it up for sharing right now.
This is Lily. I would like to not necessarily ask a question. I just want to thank you. Can you hear me? I don't know if I'm unmuted.
Yes, Lily.
Thank
yes.
you. This was so moving. I am so moved by this presentation of all of you. And I just want to let you know that I don't identify as a bulimic or an anorexic, but I've had flirtations with that. It never took me down that road, but it could have. But I remember, you know, several weeks of trying anorexia, and I didn't go down that road. I remember losing weight very quickly and thinking this is the way to live. This is long before program. And bulimia, I think I'm sure I was an exercise bulimic. At one point I did identify as that, and I do remember that my mother would say, if you keep doing that, you are going to not be well when you're older. And I'm older now because I've been in program a long time, and many of the injuries that I have, especially my back, I came from exercise bulimia. So that was so that I could you know, eat as much as I want and exercise it off. So I would say that I am a bulimic in that way. I tried vomiting at one time as a young teenager, and it just I couldn't do it. I mean, it was just, but other teenagers were doing it, and I thought, this is a great thing, you know, and it was just such a wonderful idea. So I've had flirtations with all of the manifestations of this powerful disease and the image problem and all of that. I've had all of that, and just hearing you and hearing all of your honesty, it's just, I don't know, I just feel like I want to cry all day today, not for pain, but really for joy of knowing that I have not had to partake in any of that for years and not compulsively eat for years. And I am so grateful to you for this wonderful workshop. I think it's something that people, whether or not they've ever flirted with any of these other manifestations of compulsive eating, I think everyone should listen to this. I know that it was very moving, and I want to thank you very, very much for having this. And I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Lily. Anybody else have a question or a comment?
Hello, this is Joanne. Go ahead.
Okay, I heard two of you. Who are you?
This is Lisa in Phoenix. I'll wait until Joanna's done. Okay. Thank you, Lisa. This is Joanne, compulsive eater, anorexic, and bulimic from Michigan. And I am overwhelmed with gratitude for you for putting this workshop on today. I mean, when I came into see how a number of years ago, I think I felt like I was the only one. And today, because of courage of you people that have spoken out today, I think we're going to see more people coming to us for help. And I thought what you said was
I've experienced some of it I haven't, because we all, you know, experience bulimia and anorexia at different levels. But the bottom line is it's deadly. It's a lot of people die from it, and they may be, you know, it may say in their obituary that they died from a heart failure, but it really was from anorexia or bulimia. And we're just so lucky to have C-Help and to have a program that really addresses all kinds of eating disorders in Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. So thank you again. It was just great. Appreciate you. And I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Joanne. And Lisa?
Yes, I'm here. Lisa, compulsive eater, anorexic, bulimic in Phoenix. It's many years since I said that, anorexic, bulimic. And I came on the meeting late because I had written down it started at 11, so we get our times all screwy being in a different time zone, but very, very moving, very I feel like somebody else said that I could just sit down and cry for a while here, but I am one of those people too that came very close to an edge that I mean it was deadly with my anorexia and bulimia, and I ended up in treatment years and years ago in the 80s for the bulimia part of it. But, you know, I've got to say that C-How for me has been such an answer, and it takes incredible courage to say out loud that you have, that I have a problem like that I've ever been like that, and really I applaud you. Robin, yours was the only one I got to hear, so I'm hoping this is taped. But, yeah, thank you. Thank you for having the courage to bring this out into the open. The thing that's always gotten me through with this is realizing that God can use this in other people's lives, and that somehow, some way, I may be able to help somebody else who's experiencing the same devastating illness. And really, the only remnants that I still have of the disease of anorexia and bulimia, I'm always a compulsive eater, but I have such a distorted self-image that if my weight is up, even an eeny bit, it can wreck my whole day and week until, because I'm on maintenance, I'll weigh myself again in another week. But like today, I was up 2 pounds, and I'm devastated today, to be honest with you. I haven't done anything different, so I assume it's all going to level itself out. But thank you guys so much for being so honest, and I applaud you. That's all I have. Thanks.
Lisa, thank you so much for your share. Who else? Is there anybody else that would like to share or ask any of us a question?
Yes, this is Deb. I'm a compulsive eater. I would like to ask the panel a question, please, Robin.
Okay.
Thank you. Because eating disorders most often begin in teenage years, typically, what would you say to a teenager who does not see her destruction of eating patterns as an excessive disease? And or what would you say to a teenager or a 20-year-old who doesn't even know about a 12-step program with regard to removing some of the obsessive thoughts and the spiritual nature of our compulsive eating? And I'll mute and I'll pass, and I would welcome any answers that any one of the panel members could share with regard to focusing with the teenagers and young adults who are in the miseries of the beginnings, perhaps, of this disease. I'll pass.
Thank you, Deb. I'll say real fast that what I would say myself is I don't believe that you can quit it if you're practicing the bulimia or the anorexia. I really don't know that we can get over it on our own. I just don't think we can. I think it's just only going to get worse. And so I would just beg them to seek help. And I believe, for me, that the 12 steps is the answer. I believe See How was my answer. And, you know, See How puts out little pamphlets that, you know, you wouldn't even maybe need to say anything, that you could hand them one of those pamphlets or just give them the website address. But just let them know that there is help out there. And more than that, even let them know that there's other people. There's hundreds of us. There's thousands of us, I'm sure. I felt so alone when I first, I thought I was the only one. What a freak I am. What a freak. You know, I'm not a freak. I have this disorder, and many other people do, and we just need to love each other. And it is, you know, a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual maintenance. I would just really hope that they have a higher power and that they are seeking his will. And anybody else want to comment on that?
Just on that topic, you know, for me, when I was young, I was warned very, very strongly to stay away from alcohol. My family was just filled with terrible alcoholism, and I remember my mother telling me, son, please, please, please don't drink, and that did not stop me from drinking. And what happened was when I did start drinking, and the big book says ignoring, Bill talks about ignoring the warnings of his people as well, is that the drinking worked, and as long as it worked, I did it until it stopped working. But no one, I hid my drinking, and so no one really ever and said, "Rat, we think you have a problem," until the very end, when it was so far gone, there was, you know, I had alcohol-induced psychosis. And as far as the eating disorder goes, I hid that as well, and people would say you look too thin, but I would just disagree and not hear them. And no one ever gave me information, a pamphlet or a book or anything about anorexia or bulimia, and now there's plenty of information out there about that. And no one ever said, and I've had people come to me and say, "Will you talk my so-and-so, my daughter, my son, my husband, whatever, about your eating disorder." And those talks are not preachy. They're not, here's the solution. You need to quit. This is just me sharing my experience. This is where the disease took me. And my fear is that if you get caught up in it and like I did, that it may kill you, because it almost killed me. And so finding another anorexic bulimic to share with that person, and it's tricky sharing with adolescents when you're an adult, because, you know, adolescents don't really care to listen to adults because they know it all. But there's a gift of literature, and there's a gift of having them sit down and talk with another person who says, "You know, I know what it feels like to hate your body." And that may trigger a response in them, even though they may not be able at that moment to fully process it. They may remember, you know, that person that said, "I know what it's like to hate your body every day and to be obsessed with losing weight every day. And if you ever need help, there's help out there." And sometimes it's just as simple as that. So that's my two cents. Thank you.
Thanks, Rowdy. Anybody else want to speak on that?
This is Lori, and I'm a compulsive eater, bulimic.
Go right ahead, Lori.
Okay. I definitely can identify with what Robin was saying. I was in a treatment center one time, and I even had the doctors say, there was this one girl that was really, you know, struggling with the anorexia, and she said, well, we can't let her out. She doesn't have any money, but anorexics like her are sure to die. Even, and this is like the top place in the country to go and get help with eating disorder and like the big expert. So it reminded me of like when Bill was telling his story and the doctor said alcoholics of your type, there is no hope. There's only one hope, and it's a spiritual, you know, awakening. And I tried to get that in a different program, but since I quit drinking, I just couldn't quit throwing up, you know. And so then I did a different eating 12-step, and it just didn't work. But just now got to see how, and so far it's been, July 4th was the first abstinent day. So I'm really grateful to you guys, and I'm really grateful for putting this on. And for the person with the adolescent, just love them and accept them. And really, we can't, until you reach your bottom, there's not much that can be said. Luckily, with the bulimia, it's kind of hard to not notice that you're throwing up. It's a, that, you know, I knew of all the help and took all the help that was the therapy, therapeutic, mental illness kind of approaches. So, and this is the first thing that's ever worked. So I'm really grateful. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you so much, Lori. Does anybody else want to share?
Hi, Robin. This is Janie in St. Pete.
Hi, Janie. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. Thank you, everyone on the panel. It was really great to hear everybody's feedback. I, too, am an anorexic, bulimic, compulsive eater. I just had a flashback to being in the second grade. And our school teacher was telling us about Italy, where there were vomitoriums. And I perked right up, because these people, the Romans, in their decadent life, were gorging and gorging and gorging. But they had these wonderful public vomitoriums where everybody could vomit, right? No disgrace, and then continue eating. Well, I was just about 7, and I thought this was a wonderful idea. I thought, my goodness, that's great. And, you know, in retrospect, that's not a normal response for a 7-year-old to have, because at that age, I was already into my eating disorder. I was always very thin. I wasn't a fat child, but I was always obsessed and miserable over my body. And I remembered one thing when I was living in Houston. I did leave Houston to get sober and in Minnesota, and I also left to go into a hospital for the anorexia and bulimia. There were meetings there at that time for anorexics and bulimics. I didn't do that well in OA. It was a stopgap for me. However, the anorexic bulimic meetings were much better. I still wasn't in recovery because it was mostly women. I think it was all women. They were all thin, and I could identify with that. That was okay, being thin at any cost, which is what appealed to me. So today I'm in recovery for compulsive eating, anorexia, bulimia. When I came in to see how I weighed 194 pounds, of course I'd starved myself down from 204 to 194 in a month. Well, we know how to do that. We just stop eating. Not a problem. I can stop eating at a drop of a hat, so I'm always conscious you've got to eat your three meals a day. I don't want to go back there. I'm grateful. I have shame. I can tell people that I'm a compulsive eater, and once I start, I can't stop, especially with sugar. The general public is able to absorb that, and compassionately. Once I let the cat out of that and say, I am also an anorexic bulimic, there's not a lot of encouragement. There's not a lot of, wow, you've really done well. They don't want to hear it. It's pretty disgusting. And so I feel shame that I did vomit my food up. I would just think I can eat all this food and just go home and vomit it up and brush your teeth in such denial to look okay and to do all these things. So I'm glad that we hear more and more people that say they're anorexic bulimics, because it makes it easier. Eating disorders, I still feel we have a lot to learn. There are too many things going on that we don't know about. So I'm Janie in St. Pete, 727-544-5116. Tomorrow morning I weigh, and I always think, I hope I'm just, you know, at that 135 range. That seems to be a weight that in my mind I can cope with. If it gets down any further, I think, gee, I'm getting anorexic again. Or if it goes up, then I think I'm getting fat. It's always a challenge on Monday morning when I weigh myself. Thank you for your service and for my recovery. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Janie. Anybody else want to ask a question or share?
Hi, this is Margie in Phoenix.
Go right ahead, Margie.
Well, it was a wonderful eye-opener, and I'm so grateful that I was able to hear it, so thank you to all three. And where I related was, I remember telling my sponsor, I looked in the mirror, and I just don't feel as fat as I look. So I have that dysmorphia or had it as well, and I really heard the part about it's a daily spiritual reprieve. So I'm just so grateful. I wanted to say thank you. And that's it.
Thank you so much. Anybody else want to share or have a question? Okay, well, it's been a great workshop. I've really enjoyed it. I think that I know I needed it. I hope, and it sounds like others have heard the message, and I hope that they have gotten hope. I hope if anybody's out there struggling with this, that you will be brave enough to just come forward, admit it, write about it, do what you got to do, and work the steps toward, you know, with it. And I'm going to ask again, does anybody else have any questions, or does anybody from the panel have anything else that they wish they would have talked about? Okay, well, maybe we'll wrap it up. And I just thank you all,
Robin,
for being here.
Yes. Would it be all right if the panelists gave their phone numbers again?
Absolutely. Good idea. Let's see. First we had Joanne. Joanne, you want to give your number again?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for everybody that shared today. It was a very moving meeting. I'm so grateful. Yes, my number is 303-747-2415, and that's Mountain Time. That's 303-747-2415. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. And next we have Rowdy.
Okay, everybody. I'm in Mountain Standard Time. My name's Rowdy, compulsive eater. My phone number is 970-488-9244. That's 970-488-9244, and I welcome calls.
Thank you, Rowdy. And then Patricia?
Hi, this is Patricia, compulsive eater, anorexic, bulimic. Thank you so much, everyone. And my number is Eastern Standard Time, area code 718-309-6010, 718-309-6010. Thank you.
Okay, Patricia, thank you. And I'm Robin, and I am in Central Time, Missouri. And my number is area code 660-425-5799. It's 660-425-5799. I'm Central Time, and I have a Verizon phone. If that helps anybody, it doesn't matter to me, but if it helps anybody else, that's great. So I guess that's going to wrap up our workshop, unless anybody has a burning desire. All right. Well, God bless us all, right? God bless us all, and thank you so much for being here. God, thank you for program. Thank you for See How. It's definitely changing and saving my life, and I wish you all a very great Sunday afternoon. Love you all. That's it.
Thanks, Robin. Thanks, everybody. Did a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you,
Robin. Can we stop with a serenity prayer, and then I'll stop the recording?
Oh, yes. Yes, thank you so much. Yes, let's all say the serenity prayer, all of us that wish to, after a moment of quiet meditation, for those still suffering, and outside of program, and for ourselves. God, grant me the serenity
to accept
the things I can.
Amen. Thank you all.
Thank you, Cheryl.